This is July 27th, 2005. We're in San Jose, California, the Mexican Heritage Plaza, interviewing Isabella Duron for the Bracero History Project. I am Steve Velasquez from the Smithsonian Institution. So, Ms. Duron, a little bit about yourself. Where were you born and in what year?
I was born in 1947 in Salinas, California.
Salinas, California. Okay. Were your parents, tell me a little bit about your parents. Were they born here or in Mexico?
My father was born in Mexico. My mother was born in Arizona.
Okay.
My father's family migrated into Arizona and worked the mines, where obviously he met my mother. And then my father's family continued to migrate into California, where they finally settled in Salinas, and family settled over 75 years ago there. Okay. But they did do some farm worker jobs in the early days. But by the time I was born, my parents and grandparents had been long settled in Salinas.
In Salinas. So there were free contract days. So tell me your relationship between your parents and you and the Bracero
program. Well, Salinas obviously is the lettuce capital of the world, and being an agricultural community, imported a lot of braceros. I have less of real information about them in my early years, because obviously as a child I wasn't very observant, but in my teen years I had a relationship with them in a very interesting way, thanks to my mother, whom you will get to speak to when you get to Salinas. She, my mother was helping build a Mexican Catholic church in Salinas back in the 50s, and she would run the Fiestas Patrias Queens. There was not a huge Mexican population living in Salinas. It was very much a white Republican agricultural community. And so there were very few established families there. Most of the Mexicans who were in town were bracero, who were there living in the camps. And so what my mother would do was she would take us to the camps and we would dance with the braceros in order to raise money. You know, dollar a dance. I remembered it would seem like every other Thursday night for a certain number of months that she was running this fundraising campaign. She would take us out there, and there were four or five of us young women, and the guys would be all freshly washed and so on and so forth, and they turned the mess hall into the dance hall. And there were five of us dancing with 30 and 40 men all night raising money for this church my mother got built. And I remember that when we talk about the church, actually, which is over 50 years old, she says, bracero money built that church, because that was where we ended up getting most of the money for the church. But and so I think my relationship to braceros was in my looking at them and realizing we didn't all look alike, that in fact Mexicans were indeed of varying stripes, sizes, and colors. And I don't know why at a young age of, you know, 10, 11, and 12, I had even a stereotypical view of what Mexicans were about. And when I saw Mexicans from Mexico, and they were tall and short and fat and thin and blonde and red-haired and blue-eyed, and they came from all of these different states, and depending on which state, you know, guys from San Luis Potosí were huge giants and other guys. So it was, you know, for me, it was a particular look into a piece of my history, where my father came from, where my grandparents came from. And so that was striking to me. But what was telling to me as a young teenager, I think I was a senior in high school at that point in time, there was an accident, I believe it was Chular, where a busload of braceros, there were about 60 of them, were their truck, which had no windows in it, got stalled on the railroad track, and the train ran it over, and there were 60 of them killed. I don't even remember if there were more than 60 in the bus, because they used to cram them into those buses. And My father was a pallbearer at the funeral for 30 of the braceros whose bodies were never claimed. And it was in my high school gym, in Palma High School, which was a Catholic high school. And they were lined up like a cross. I went to the funeral as well. I may have been in the choir or something. But I remember that, and I remember that it was that which fueled the beginning of the end of the Bracero movement, because Dr. Ernesto Galarza used it in an opportunity to go off to Congress and finally get the program shut down because it was abused. It was highly abused. But I remembered that experience, and it's one of the pictures in my mind that has never left me in terms of that history of the Bracero. And my mother has a lot more history for you. She'll be able to tell you. She even has a picture of that funeral, so she'll be able to show it to you. And I encourage you to ask her if she knows whether those guys were buried in Salinas. What happened to those? There may be a potter's field in Salinas with those 30 graves. I don't know if they were marked, what happened to them, so on and so forth. But mine was just that that particular space and time. And my understanding of the Bracero, but I also, and my relationship to them. But the church still stands, and it's a wonderful little church. And I don't think half of the people in that town know its history. A town when I grew up of 30,000, which was mostly white, is now 50% Mexican. And it's 300,000 people. It's a huge little city now. So it's a curious piece in Salinas history, which then gave birth, helped give birth to the UFW. So you see, it's
So your relationship with the Braceros was a fairly positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like were there other Mexican American families who had the same experience, or even an opposite relationship?
I actually don't know. As I said, first of all, there weren't that many Mexican-American families in Salinas. So most of my relationship, even in the churches, I mean, you know, was, if they were mostly braceros, they were single men who were there, you know, without their families. So I don't know what anybody's relationship with them. I do know that I was very sensitive to racism even then. And I was sensitive to the fact that even though we were Mexican-American, it was also racism then. I mean, look at how I described the town, you know. Mm-hmm. I used to describe the town as saying when I was growing up in Salinas, it was kind of this dichotomy. If you're white, you owned the fields, and if you were brown, you worked in them. And that was this kind of thing. But so I was very sensitive to that issue even as a child, because you would, in our Catholic schools, which we went to all our lives, there were very few. It was like one or two Mexicans, and they were my brother and sister, or they were one other family. So there wasn't a lot in terms. My mother might be able to tell you more, because obviously, having been an adult, she was much more observant. I don't know what others' experiences was, but I was very sensitive to what I thought seemed kind of a dehumanization of. Because I would go to these camps, and as I was describing, some of them were fairly decent and others were funky little joints, you know. Some of them seemed as though their owners would take decent care of the place, and others ramshackle. So, and yet I got the impression, this was the impression I got from the men, was that they were just glad for the opportunity to work. And they, if they felt badly about how they were treated, they never showed that. Maybe they talked to each other, obviously. But I never heard that. And then once again, as I said, I was probably one of those teenagers who didn't much pay attention to anybody else's issues anyway. But I feel that I felt sorry for their situation, because they were, a lot of them, crammed into small barrack-like places. It must have not been very comfortable. They you know, they were like soldiers crammed into a barracks. And mm-hmm. I don't know how badly they were treated, and they never discussed it, but I'm sure they missed their families, and sometimes they talk about their families. And, you know, we sort of became substitutes for that minute, mm-hmm. you know, for mm-hmm. a mother, a girlfriend, a daughter, you know, depending on their age.
Yeah. Somebody else to talk to.
Exactly.
For a few,
exactly. An exactly. Hour, so. You know.
And it was just your family that did the dances, or were there other families?
Well, my mother was the basically the president of the club that was the fundraising arm of the church. And there were a number of families in Salinas. And I'm sure my mother would better be able to tell you who they were. But she would try to recruit their daughters. Mm-hmm. Of course, she had several herself, so that was a problem. She was always recruiting her own daughters because she'd get someone to run for queen, and then they'd get a friend, and they'd get a friend. So there were a number of us, but, you know, there were families in town who wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. They didn't want their daughters to go and dance with the braceros, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, that was my mother, and she was going to build her church. You know, I don't know why. I think it's so much a piece of this history because she always says, you know, it was Bracero money that built that church. And if you go to the church, it's quite beautiful. It's probably small in today's terms, but in those days it was a basilica. And they spent $12,000 for the altar, which they had carved, hand-carved in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So when they brought it in, it was this humongous thing. And still stands today. And I just think it's very much a part of the Bracero history and of the history of the Mexicans in that town. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the new, I mean, you know, when my mother in the 50s was raising money for this church, there were no sponsorships from Chevron Corporation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for a Mexican woman to do it, yeah. was even more so. Yeah. So there is obviously some political and social ramifications of the Bracero program that impacted the town mm-hmm. at various levels. And by the way, I do not know if that picture you showed of the movie house, mm-hmm. the state movie house, you might ask, maybe my mother will recognize. There was a Mexican movie house in Salinas. Mm-hmm. I remember it as a young girl, I don't even remember, 9, 10, 11, going to the Mexican movies. It doesn't exist today, I don't think, but it did then. And I don't know if that's it. I can't remember the name of the movie house, but it sort of looked familiar. Mm-hmm. So you might ask them. Because it's not that far away from where the church is. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that far away from. It was in the sort of. It's a neighborhood that now has been sort of historically kind of subdivided as a piece of Chinatown, which is all of three blocks. Mm-hmm. And it's not that far from the Smithsonian where you're going.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's all in that neighborhood. It's interesting.
Okay.
Piece of Salinas lore, which is also home of John Steinbeck,
exactly.
who's also three blocks away from the Steinbeck Museum.
Right. All right. Well, we're actually off to go there in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And this has been a very interesting look at the Braceros that, you know, not a lot of people talk about. You know, not a lot of people have the experience of, you know, going to the dance and actually doing something fun with them,
right?
You know,
right?
Outsiders.
It's a human mm-hmm. moment, mm-hmm. and which is why I think I'm particularly sensitive. I was interested in the comments that were made last night. I was totally not aware of this sense of competitiveness between Mexican Americans and the Mexicans, that even actually comes up today in political and social discussions, you know, where those people coming across the border today, you know, and you say, what do you mean those people? Those, you know. You're like only a blood, you know, a DNA structure away from me. What are you talking about? Those? So it's very interesting. So I'm curious to see how you guys evolved this project, as it really describes all of the political and undertones of the program, because I think that the Bracero program, once it ended, also opened the door in big ways to illegal immigration. Because there were a lot of people coming across legally, and the doors weren't slammed shut, and the numbers weren't few in terms of allowing them to come across. You know, and I don't remember if my father came legally or illegal. I don't remember. They came as a result of the 1910 revolution mm-hmm. time. But, I mean, they'd been citizens for so many years, I don't even know. And my mother was born in this country. But I think that that with the shutdown of that program and Bracero's going home to talk about it's, you know, it still seemed like a great place to go earn money for survival purposes. And I guess as the economies of Mexico went through their changes, that they still felt this was a way to come. And so that was, I think, and nobody's ever really detailed. They've never broken down the decades, the eras, the times when this immigration really started. Everybody thinks it's probably this illegal immigration started. Probably think it's been forever. And in reality, I think the bigger numbers started just in the 50s. So anyway, another piece of history.
So to sort of wrap up, do you see the Bracero experience, or, well, now looking back on it, do you see the Bracero experience as a positive or negative type of a program?
Well, you know, everything in context. For the men who were able to support their families back home, if they got the money, it was positive. The way they were treated was not. I think the part of the problem it's where we're not able to judge it because there is no context historically for how you know. There's such a confusion about the Mexican and Mexican-American experience. It's all one big, and it's not been sorted out. And, you know, to some people there was a lot of non-positive experience, and you hear some of that drumbeat even today that's anti-immigrant. And, you know, the Braceros were like some of that first initial immigrant wave that anybody took notice of. And I think it created a lot of backlash. And I think that, you know, nothing's ever totally positive and nothing's ever totally negative. For some, it worked okay and it worked well. And you would better get that kind of a response, I think, from the Braceros themselves. Only they can tell you whether they thought it was negative or positive.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This has been very, very entertaining. Thanks.
Well, I hope that you, I hope my mother can help you out because she's funny with her stories.